The Sedra starts off, Vayakil Moshe es kol adas b'nei Yisrael. We have three designations for the Jewish people. Kahal, Eda, Yisrael. We find that same three designations by Korban Pesach. V'shochatu also kol kahal adas Yisrael. And because of that, the Korban Pesach was shechted in three groups, and the Gemara says we weren't sure if it's three groups together, every group is 10, so it had to be shechted with 30 people minimum, or three groups of 10 separately. So therefore, it was shechted with three groups of 30 to be yotzei both shitas. Actually, there were many, many more people. But minimum, three groups, 30 in each group, to represent Kahal is one Sibur, Eda, second, and Yisrael, the third. What are these designations? So a Kahal represents a group of people who are physically united. Vayikohalu ha-Yehudim, from Megillas Esther. They congregated, a congregation. What does a congregation mean? People congregate together physically. That's one aspect of the tzibur, of the congregation, of the community, that people gather together in one place and do things together. And it has many benefits. First of all, there's the strength in numbers. Eino dome yochid oses hamitzvah l'rabim osimus hamitzvahs. There's no comparison when a person does a mitzvah on his own. He does it together with a lot of other people. There's strength in numbers. Secondly, we find Barov Am Hadras Melech. It's an honor to the Rabbanu Shel Olam to have a lot of people serving him at once than individuals, what's it called, separate. In addition to that, aside from the honor and the strength of the mitzvah, it also strengthens every individual. Everybody needs peer pressure. Right. You can't do it on your own. If you live in a place where nobody's from, obviously your level is not going to be the same as if you have people around you that make you feel more responsible. In fact, the Maril Diskin says, we normally think that don lekaf schus, giving people the benefit of the doubt. You see somebody do something, could be did something wrong, could be that there's a way of understanding that it wasn't wrong. Right, you see somebody walk into a non-kosher restaurant. Give him the benefit of the doubt, he went to go to the bathroom. He went to buy a soda. Or he's eating treif. So we have a mitzvah in something that is reasonable for a person who it's reasonable about, to give him the benefit of the doubt. Not to assume he did something wrong, but he probably went in for an okay purpose. We normally think that that's for the sake of the person that you're judging. Give him the benefit of the doubt. Right, don't look at him in a negative way. If it's reasonable to give him the benefit of the doubt, give him the benefit of the doubt. But Maril Diskin says, it's just as much for your sake. Why? Because if you look around and judge people, favorably, but you assume that they've done things wrong, then you've surrounded yourself with people who are no good. And they give no peer pressure on you, it's the opposite. This one's no good, and that one's no good, and this one, this thing, that no good. So I don't feel any pressure to be any better than them. But if I give people the benefit of the doubt, and I look at people as being fine people, then there's a little bit of pressure on me to also be a fine person, because I don't want to stand out and be different than the crowd. People, there's an idea of peer pressure. So therefore, giving people the benefit of the doubt benefits me, not just benefits them. So that is the idea of the kahal, strength in numbers. Then there's the eda. An eda has the connotation of edus, testimony. What unites us is not our proximity, closeness physically, but what unites us is ideas, goals, standards. You can have an Eda that are scattered over the whole whole world, but they're united by common goals, common principles, common ideas. That's an Eda. And another source for the word Eda could be Yaad. In the airport, right, on the big board over there, they have Yaad, which means destination. Everybody has the same destination. We're all part of the same Eda. We're all going the same place. We're all of us have the same goals, right, and we're all headed in the same direction. That gives us unity. So you don't have to be united physically to be an Eda. You have to be united in principle. Principles, ideas, values, goals. That's what unite people. That's an Eda. That's a separate thing. Now, Korach made a mistake and thought that that's the only purpose of unity. The Kahal and the Eda. And therefore, what's the purpose of leaders? Leaders are either to unite people physically, give them a central figure to unite around, that's one kind of leader, or to impress them with the right goals and standards and values and principles which will unite them spiritually. So Korach said, Ki kol ha'eda kulam kidoshim. If the Eda is not holy, and they need to be educated and inspired to have the right values and goals and the right destination and to get on the right path to unite them, then fine, you need a leader. But in this situation, kol ha'eda kulam kedoshim, they're all holy already. So we don't need a leader to teach us how to be holy. We are holy. And so what is the other purpose? To unite them physically, to give them a central figure around whom to unite. Uvesocham Hashem, we have that central figure, it's called God. Right? God's presence is so clear over here that we surround the Mishkan. We surround God's presence. We have the clouds of glory, we have the pillar of fire. So what do we need? A leader. Umadua tishnasu al kahal Hashem. Why, therefore, are you necessary to make yourselves great over the Kahal? The Eda is all Kodesh. So we don't need you as a leader to make us more Kodesh. And we have something to unite us, God. So why do we need you to be leaders over the Kahal? So Korach thought the only two kinds of unity is the Eda and the Kahal. And therefore, if the Eda is all completely Kodesh and the Kahal has something to unite around, what do we need leaders for? But he made a mistake, because there's a third aspect to the community. The third aspect is Yisrael. Yisrael means Yeshishim Ribui Osios LaTorah. The first letters of those words spell Yisrael. Yeshishim Ribui Osios LaTorah. There are 600,000 letters to the Torah. Which a simple meaning is that there are 600,000 letters in the Torah, and every Jew is a letter. Right, there are 600,000 root souls of the Jewish people, even though there's more than 600,000 Jews. But there are 600,000 root souls, and everybody's part, it's like a cluster. There's clusters of souls, and everybody's part of a cluster. And they're unique in the part of the cluster they are, but there's 600,000 root souls. So everybody is part of a letter, just like the letters have different parts to them. Right? A letter could be made up of many letters. A shin is made up of a zayin and a vav and a yud perhaps, whatever. So each letter is made up of many letters. So each root soul is made up of many souls. But they're all letters in the Torah. And just like every letter in the Torah is unique, because even though there are only 22 different letters, but it's not really true because every letter is unique by its placement. The Beis in Bereishis is not the same Beis as Bara, because the Beis in Bereishis is preceded by nothing, blank, what's it called, parchment, and it has a Reish after that, and an Aleph, and then a Shin, and then a Yud. And the Beis of Bara is preceded by the Tuf of Bereishis and the Reish of the word Bara. And it's in Bereishis, right? And it could be that same word appears somewhere else, but it's in a different context. So every letter is unique according to its placement, where it is. So every Jew is unique, right, in where he is, who he is, what he is, what his strengths are, what his talents, abilities, capabilities, what period of history he came into this world, where on the map he came into the world, what kind of family he was born into. Everything makes everybody unique. And we're all necessary. Just like in a Torah, if you don't have every letter in its right place, you don't have a Torah. If you don't have every Jew, right, doing what they're supposed to be doing, then you don't have the Torah of the Jewish people either. Now, we've explained in the past that that's all very nice, but it's not true. There are not 600,000 letters in the Torah, right? So you'll tell me, okay, when it comes to gematrias, you know, plus one or plus two or minus one, it doesn't make that much of a difference. So how much is the difference? 300,000. There are only 304,588 letters in the Torah. So we're missing about 300,000, right? Which is not, you know, insignificant, you know, plus or minus. Right, plus or minus. So there are many answers. There are many answers to this question. Some say that you're supposed to count the Targum, which is also part of the Torah, so that makes it almost double. Some say that you count the space between the letters. That's also, in other words, the letter is not just the black, it's the white also. Others say that there's a lot of answers.
The letters are made of
multiple. Right, the letters are made of different letters. There are a lot of answers. A lot of answers. But I don't think there's any question. I know about 11 answers. But Lanius Daiti, there's no question. The question would only be if it said, Yesh Shishim Ribui Osios Bat Torah. There's 600,000 letters in the Torah. But then it wouldn't spell Yisrael. It would spell Yisra'ab. In order to spell Yisrael, it has to be Yesh Shishim Ribui Osios La Torah. Which I think means not that there's 600,000 letters in the Torah. There's 600,000 letters to the Torah. Meaning, there are 304,000 written letters in the Torah. But you have to add another 600,000 to make that Torah complete. And that's what the Zohar says. This is in the Zohar. Yisrael v'yoraisa v'kud shabrichu chadur. That the Torah, the Jewish people, and God are one. And therefore, if you don't add the neshamas of the Jewish people to the Torah, it's not a complete Torah. And therefore, in addition to the 304,000 written letters in the Torah, you have to add another 600,000 letters, which is the neshamas of the Jewish people. And that makes the Torah complete. And just like in the written Torah, if a letter's missing, or it's in its wrong place, then there is no Torah. If there's a neshama of a Jew missing, there's no Torah. And he's not in his right place. He's not doing what he has to do. So every Jew helps to make the Torah complete. That's Yisrael. Meaning the following. You can have unity physically. You can have everybody holy and the right in the right direction, and you still need a leader. Why? Because I always like to compare it to an orchestra. Okay, you have an orchestra. Every instrument, every what's
artist.
It called, artist, right? Right is an expert in his thing. The clarinet guy knows how to play the clarinet 100%. He doesn't need anybody to teach you how to play clarinet. He knows better than all the teachers. The same thing goes with the drummer, and the same thing goes with the guy who plays the trumpet, and whatever it may be, and the piano, or whatever. And they're all together in one place. So you don't need a leader to teach them how to play. They know how to play. You don't need a leader to gather them together. They're all gathered together. So what do you need a leader for? To synchronize them. You still need a maestro. You still need an orchestra leader. They all know perfectly how to play their instrument. They all are there physically together. But if they don't know how to coordinate their part with everybody else, then it's just a cacophony of noise. It's not an orchestra. So therefore, you still need a leader. That's what Korach didn't understand. I need a leader either to get the people to be holy or to unite them. If they're united and holy, what do we need leaders for? The answer is you could be holy and united, but you need somebody to coordinate and synchronize everybody together with everybody else. That's the idea of Yisrael. And there's a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. The Mishnah says, Hillel Omer Al Tifrosh Min HaTzibur. Hillel says, don't separate yourself from the Tzibur. Be part of the community. And then he says four other things that don't seem to have any connection to each other or to the first thing he started with. Next thing is, Al-tamin ba'atzmecha ad yom moscha. Don't trust in yourself until you die. In other words, always be afraid that, you know, you're never guaranteed that you're going to remain okay. Okay? Second thing is, Al-todnis chavercha shtagilim kamo. Don't judge other people till you come into their place. Third thing is, al tomar al dover she'ef shar lishmoa she'sofa lishama. There are many different explanations, but one explanation is, don't say on something that can't be heard, that in the end it'll be heard. And I'll explain to you what it means in a second. And the third thing is, don't say l'cheshe'ef ne'ish eshna. When I have time, I'll learn. Shema lo sipon, and maybe you won't have time. So they're very nice things, but what do they have to do with each other? Each one is a separate thing. Why did Hillel say these five things together? So therefore, I think Hillel really said only one thing. Don't separate yourself from the tzibur. Be part of the community. And there are four reasons why people think they don't need a community. And they have to do with the three kinds of community that we mentioned. First reason people think they don't have to have anything to do with the community is because they don't need a peer pressure. They're strong enough on their own. Communities are for weak people. People who need support, right? Communal support. But I don't need that. So comes along Hillel and says, Al-tamin ba'atzmecha ad yom moscha. Everybody needs peer pressure. Everybody needs communal support. Nobody's strong enough. Don't trust yourself till you die. So that's the first reason why people think they don't need a community. Takes away that. Second thing. People think that they don't have that communal support. Because, what's it called, this one's no good, and that one's no good, and the other one's no good. Right? He judges people before he understands their situation. So everybody's no good. So that takes away the reason for peer pressure, like we said, because I don't get that peer pressure because nobody's good. It also takes away the idea of an Eda. I would be very happy to get together with people with common purpose and common goals and common principles, but not these people. These people are really rotten people. They don't have the same goals I have, the same what's it called, principles, the same values and standards, but you're only judging them from afar. Wait till you come into their place. Get close. Don't avoid becoming part of the tzibur, because from afar, these people don't look like people that are going to be part of your Eda. Get closer to them. See them from close up. You may be right, but maybe when you get a little bit closer, you'll find out that they're not as bad as they look from far away. That you judge them wrongly. So that's the second reason. People say, I would love to have be united and part of a community, but these people are not the kind of people you want to have a connection with. So don't judge them until you come into their place. Third reason. People say, I have to, contribute now Yisrael. So we got the Kahal and the Eda excuses, now the Yisrael excuses. Person says, I have my unique portion to give to the tzibur. Right? I'm a letter. I'm unique. I have my talents, abilities, capabilities. And I've tried to make my contribution to the tzibur. And I constantly tell them my good advice. And they don't listen. So they're a bunch of idiots. Right? I've tried to contribute my part. But these idiots don't want to listen to good advice. And that Hillel said, don't say on something that can't be heard, in the end it'll be heard. Many people say, I know I'm right. And in the end, they'll see that I'm right, but what can you do with these idiots who don't want to accept what is? Don't say on something that can't be heard. Maybe you're not right. Maybe your advice is not good advice. And that's why they don't listen to it. Don't say on something that can't be heard, in the end it'll be heard. In other words, I'm sure this is right. And if people don't want to hear it now, in the end they'll see that I was right. Maybe not. Maybe in the end they'll see you weren't right. Maybe everything that you think is not what's good for the tzibur. Right? So that's another reason why people don't want to have anything to do with the tzibur. I've tried to put my input and nobody wants to listen. Maybe nobody wants to listen because your input is no good. Maybe you have to think of some other input to do. And the third thing is, also with Yisrael, people say, yeah, I have to develop my unique part in Klal Yisrael. If I get too involved with the tzibur, it takes away from my time. I need time to learn, to do my thing. Right? Al Tomer, don't say, l'cheshe'efne, when I'll have the time. because I won't be involved in communal things, so I'll have time, eshna, I'll learn, and I'll build myself my unique part. Shema lo sipana, because maybe God won't give you that time to benefit at the expense of the tzibur. You owe the community time. And if you steal that time away from the community, thinking that you're going to develop your unique self, maybe God won't let you have that time, and he'll give you other things that will take up your time, and he's not going to give you the ability to develop yourself on the cheshbon of the tzibur. You owe the, Rav Moshe Feinstein says, just like you have to give 10% of your money to tzedakah, you have to give 10% of your time to the community. That's ma'aser. You can't just live on your own. So therefore, in order to make a mishkan, right, it's interesting, the mishkan patterned itself after, it was like a little world. It was a microcosm. It was like a new creation of the world in a very small way, and everything in the Mishkan corresponded to things in the world. In fact, according to the way that it's described in a Medrash, the Mishkan, when you walked in, looked like a planetarium. The little brass hooks in the coverings made it look like stars in the sky. It looked like a little universe. And everything corresponded to different things in the universe, to different kalim or whatever. And it's interesting that Kli Yoker says, that's why there's a lot of the terminologies that's used by the creation of the world is used by the Mishkan. Vatechel kol avoda, like vayichulu hashamayim ve'aretz. Everything, right, is what's it called, is corresponds to the creation. He says another interesting thing. God created the world with two midos. Midos hadin, and then he added rachamim. Okay, who built the Mishkan? Two people. Bezalel and Ohaliyav. Ohaliyav came from the which tribe? Dan. Din. And what's it called? And Bezalel came from Yehuda, which is Yud Kevavke, rachamim. So we have the Mishkan being built by Midas HaDin and Midas HaRachamim. Same way the world was. So I'm thinking, therefore, it says that they couldn't put the Mishkan together. Klal Yisrael built the Mishkan. Everybody built a different kli. Everybody had a different part in community. And then they had to get together, the whole community together, the Jewish people. Right? And who put it up? Moshe Rabbeinu. What was the purpose of the world? The world was created for two things. Bishvil Yisrael shenikraim reishis, or bishvil haTorah. So therefore, both of those things had to play a part in the building of the Mishkan. Yisrael, vayakel Moshe, kol adas Yisrael, and Moshe, who was the power of Torah, had to be involved in the building of the world, because the world was created for the sake of Yisrael, so Yisrael was involved, and for the sake of the Torah, so Moshe had to be involved. So
he
that...
He also had emes to the equation. Moshe emes.
Okay. And the world also is, Bereshis Bar Elokim, is the Sofei Tevis emes.